Good morning, members and colleagues. My name is Nalisa Kanjo. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee representing AAC. My name is Simpion Baita from the AAC on this committee. Thank you.
Morning, can I check with the minister, colleagues, and I'm Tembe Ramchunu, the member of the Portfolio Committee from the AAC.
Good morning, my name is Mpho Tongwane. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee from the AAC.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Naren Singh, a member on this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Nivir Paulson, and I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is James Larimer, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Anna Weber. I am a member of this committee. Good morning.
Good morning, my name is Hannah Winkler. I'm a member of the committee.
My name is Dimu Dise. I'm a member of the committee from the Great African National Congress.
Maybe for purposes of so that we finish this item, Honorable Minister, from the side of the department, if we can get such introduction, then we'll come to Auditor General's office and then further.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone. My name is Barbara Creasy. I am Minister in the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries. I'm together with our Director General, Ms. Nosipho Dlaba. And Chair, I would just want to table apologies from three of our Deputy Director Generals. Mr. Guy Preston is out of the country. Mr. Mark Gordon has a family responsibility, and Ms. Judy Beaumont is unwell. I want to suggest, because we've got a very big delegation here, that colleagues should introduce themselves, starting with DDG Cook.
Good morning, Chair, Minister and members. My name is Dimpho Makotoko, DDG Corporate Management Services.
Good morning, Chair members. My name is Esther Makau, CFO in the department.
Good morning. My name is Shoni Mujesi, DDG for Biodiversity and Conservation in the department.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Ishan Obada. I'm the DDG LACE, Legal Authorizations, Compliance and Enforcement.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members. My name is Bagana Gomana. I'm the DDG for Climate Change and Sustainable Development in India. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister. My name is Moromo Susan Lesenke. I'm the Acting DDG for Forest and Natural Resources Branch.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, Minister. My name is Zoliswa Lufele from the Office of the CFO at the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development on behalf of Forest.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, our members.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members, and good morning, honourable minister. My name is Belemane Senems Moody. I am a co-acting deputy director general for the fisheries branch.
Hey, call.
Good morning, Chair.
I just wanted to check what you mean when you say you are core. Can he clarify that? Oh, he said he is core acting.
He doesn't appoint himself.
Oh.
So he's the acting DDG.
Morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister. My name is Sue Middleton. I'm also a co-acting DDG for Fisheries Management. We are on rotation. We are rotating.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, the Honourable Members. Good morning, Honourable Minister. My name is Veronica Mogola, representing the Office of the CFO Fisheries.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Patience Tosa. I'm responsible for environmental sector performance at DEF.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm Mohauta Mugwena from the Department of Chemicals and Waste Management. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Mamukhala Musekele from the DEF Department and the Chemicals and Waste.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Simone Penifan. I'm from the Department of Environmental Affairs, Director Office. No, Director Forestry, Director Office of Director General, Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Veronica Stein from the as the Chief Director, Budget and Financial Management of the Department.
Morning all, I'm Neole Shabani from Office of the CFO, Environmental Affairs.
Morning everyone, my name is Kirsten Nguni, Office of the Minister, Parliamentarizing Office.
Morning, Nikos Liantzinis from the Office of the Minister, Minister of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries.
I assume we are done. I think it becomes a long process now, this thing of the introduction. We'll have to think about it and how best.
Chairperson, I think it's appropriate to inform the committee formally that the Deputy Director General of the Fisheries Branch is suspended. And there's an investigation into financial irregularity. She's also facing a separate charge, a disciplinary charge of financial irregularity, and the disciplinary process is going on.
Yeah, maybe as we continue, if there's anything that requires clarity, we'll clarify. Can we allow the Auditor General?
Good morning, honourable members and minister and management from DIA and also Forestry and Fisheries. My name is Eugene Dehaan. I'm the Deputy Business Executive responsible for environmental affairs, and then I'll just allow my colleague also to introduce herself.
Good morning, Chairperson.
I would request that the department give us an organogram because I'm very confused in directors and director general and all of that, so it doesn't make sense to me. I would also like the minister to take us into confidence and tell us what is happening in the sea fisheries area, because there was lots of mismanagement for quite a while, and we need to know so that we can prevent these things from happening in the future.
No, we are with you, but as we proceed, I think that will be clarified. Can you continue?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, honorable minister, and all the people that are here. My name is Ndombo Khanyi Ndamela, the senior manager responsible for Marine Living and Resources Fund for the Fisheries Branch.
National Treasury. They are right, National Treasury. Yeah, when they are here, they will properly introduce themselves. Our officials are not changing. We have the same officials. So when they have to do any responsibility, they will indicate who they are, so that we must now cut on the time. Our program is supposed to end at 12:30. So we'll have to... there's another site, 13 hours. So we'll have to manage it as much as is possible. Now, in terms of this, I should be asking for apologies if there are any, but I think in the course of doing what we're doing, the way apologies indicated, if there's any, I'll take it. Adoption of the agenda. The agenda is before you, honorable members. Any proposal for adoption? Moved and honorable Hussein, supported by honorable Mtono, agenda adopted. Then we start with item 2, which says update on progress regarding implementation of modified cash standard. But specifically, let me clarify that it's not only going to focus on that. They will tell us what are they doing, help us to understand how does it link with what we do, which is oversight, and see how best we can get support from them. They will talk to that. National Treasury have already indicated we are removing that briefing by them. Will only respond to questions if there are questions that require their response. And I think from there we'll move to briefing by the department. So in other words, Honorable Minister, your turn will come when we start with the department. We'll now allow the Office of the Auditor General to take us through their item. You see, I'm confused about this sitting arrangement here, but I don't know where I will complain about it. But we can't do anything now. So, but let's hand over to you. I don't know how do we hand over to you. So we must, or we'll use our facility. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So the purpose of today's presentation is to explain what the Auditor General does in terms of executing our oversight, and then also how we can actually help the Portfolio Committee members and honorable members to also interpret our management report and audit reports, and then also how to exercise their oversight. It's quite a lengthy presentation of about 47 slides. I will not touch on each and every slide, but I will take questions after the presentation, on the full presentation for any members seeking clarity or additional information. So I will move to slide number 4, which speaks specifically to the mandate of the Auditor General. We are a Chapter 9 institution as defined in the Section 188 of the Constitution. We also have a Public Audit Act that brought us into existence, and in Section 20 of the Public Audit Act it mentions the fact that we must prepare an audit report containing an opinion or conclusion on the financial statements, the compliance of legislation, and then also the reported performance against external objectives. We also have a Section 5 Public Audit Act, which is discretionary audits. These are audits that we may accept or decline, depending on our available capacity or even in terms of the required skills that we have. In terms of delivering on our mandates, slide number 5, we audit the financial statements, the performance reporting, which is your predetermined objectives, and compliance of legislation. We report on the findings to the accounting officers and authorities with recommendations in our audit in our management report. We also report on audit opinions and material findings to legislature and council. That's our audit report. And then we generate a commitment from all key stakeholders that we use to determine if it addresses the root causes of poor outcomes. Slide number 6. So what we do and what don't we do? We provide assurance that the financial statements are free from material misstatement. We don't guarantee completeness and accuracy of all information. That is due to the fact that we will execute our work on the sample basis. So therefore, we don't provide 100% assurance, we provide reasonable assurance. We report on the usefulness and reliability of information in your annual performance report. What we do is we merely confirm whether or not what is presented in the annual performance report is true and fair, and it's free from material misstatements. We don't make a conclusion whether or not service delivery has actually been achieved. We report on material non-compliance with relevant key legislation, and we don't provide assurance that all applicable legislation has been complied with. We look at key legislation, which is usually your PFMA, your NFMA, and any other enabling legislation that brought the entity or as part of the mandate of the department. Then we identify the key internal control deficiencies that should be addressed. What we don't do, we don't indicate, our audit process is not formulated to specifically identify fraud, but if we become aware of any fraud, we then have an obligation to either address it or then also communicate to the appropriate levels. We go to slide number 8, our different audit outcomes. So from left to right, you will see that a clean audit outcome, what does a clean audit outcome mean? It means that you've got no material findings in terms of financial statements, you've got no material findings in terms of performance information, and you've got also no material non-compliance. So whatever is presented by the department is true and fair. Again, a clean audit does not indicate that the department or entity are actually executing their mandate. It just means that whatever they're reporting is free from material misstatements. The second one is financially unqualified opinion with findings. Financially unqualified meaning the fact that the financial statements are free from material misstatements, but you do you might have material non-compliance or material findings relating to determined objectives. Then financially qualified opinion with findings. In this outcome, we actually mentioned that a specific class of transaction or account balance within the financial statements, we could not express an opinion on, or we could then say it's materially misstated with a specific amount, but the rest of the financial statements are free from material error. That's your financially unqualified opinion with findings. Then your adverse and disclaimer of opinions. So these are the two, if I can mention, worst outcomes that the department can or the entity can receive in terms of audit practice. So adverse opinion and findings is the financial statements contain so many material misstatements that we disagree with almost all the accounts and disclosure of financial statements, which means that as a user of the financial statements, you cannot rely on what has been presented in terms of the financial statements. Disclaimer of opinion is usually where we don't get any or not sufficient supporting evidence to make a conclusion, and therefore again we could not, as a user of the financial statements, you cannot rely on what has been presented. I move to slide number 9. This talks about AG's work as it relates to the Parliament. So the wheel just mentions exactly what the Portfolio Committee does in terms of gathering information, preparing reports, and then also presenting it to the legislature for adoption. On the right-hand side of this presentation, what we do is we share insights on the root causes of audit outcomes. And then also in terms, we also share recommendations that the entity or department will need to implement to improve their audit outcomes and also to sustain their audit outcomes going forward. So we, from our audit process, we will analyze to identify what is the main root causes and how can these root causes be addressed to improve the audit outcomes for the entity or department going forward. Okay, slide 11 is just an overall outcome of government for the last 10 years. It includes national, provincial and local government. From this picture, you will see the green represents clean audits or unqualified with no findings. Yellow represents an unqualified opinion, but you still have material findings. And the purple and the red indicate disclaimer or adverse opinions. So as you can see, from 2008-09 right through to 2017-18, the picture has not really changed at all. It remained more or less the same throughout the years, which then does
raise a matter of concern in terms of what is the accounting office and accounting authorities doing to actually address audit outcomes. Second slide, or the page number 12, or slide number 12, talks about the history of irregular expenditure. And this is a combination of irregular expenditure for local government being the blue line and national and provincial government being the red or orange line. And as you can see, that is the irregular expenditure incurred for that specific year. With a big spike in 1314, and then as you can see, it's actually increasing. Go to the next slide. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure also shows you more or less the same picture. And then I actually want to come to a very interesting slide, slide number 15, that talks about what are we doing about the irregular expenditure. And the red indicating that to date, nothing in the red has been dealt with in terms of irregular expenditure. So as you can see, 89%, nothing has been dealt with, and you will know from the PFMA requirements, the accounting authority, accounting officer has got an obligation to investigate any irregular expenditure, and they need to determine who needs to be held accountable and what amount of financial resources can be recovered in terms of the irregular expenditure incurred. So it's quite alarming, because you'll see out of the 194 million, only 9 million, which is the green at the top, has actually been dealt with in terms of the PFMA consequence management responsibilities that an accounting officer or accounting authority actually needs to execute. So on page 16, talks about what is the main root causes for the continued poor outcome, and you'll see on the left we've got three main root causes, being slow or no response to recommendations, that will be audit recommendations, instability, vacancies or competencies, meaning the fact that we find auditees struggling where you have a constant change of CEOs or DGs, or there's a lot of acting officials and there's no appointments being made. You will find a lot of instability in terms of leadership, and then this also causes is also a cause of the poor audit outcomes. The third one is inadequate consequences, and this one also speaks to the fact that from our understanding, we don't see the accounting officers and accounting authorities actually holding the responsible individuals accountable for the incurring of specifically material non-compliance, which relates to irregular, fruitless, or unauthorized expenditure. On the right-hand side, there are five bullets, just giving a bit more information to what I just discussed. But I think another one I didn't touch on is unethical behavior in administration and political leaders. That is also something that's also contributing to poor audit outcomes. Okay. If I go to slide number 19. So slide number 19 talks about our Public Audit Act, which I mentioned earlier. From 1st of April 2019, we got extended powers. And there were three main areas that our legislation, or our enabling Public Audit Act, extended by. And in short, we can now actually hold accounting officers and accounting authorities responsible if they do not comply with the consequence management sections within the PFMA. And we can actually determine, and we can actually issue a certificate of debt in the individual person's name for failing to implement the PFMA consequence management, or if it's a board, it will be solely and collectively the board will be responsible for the issue of for the certificate of debt. From the expansion of a mandate, it talks about three main areas. First of all, it talks about refer to material irregularities. I'll explain the definition of material irregularity a bit later on. But what this refers to is the fact that we can identify material irregularity, and if we find that we don't have the expertise, or it's at the DG level or a minister level, we can then refer that investigation to our other Chapter 9 institutions.
for them to actually pursue the investigation from a jurisdictional point of view. The second one talk about taking binding remedial action. Because of our extended mandate, we will assess whether or not an entity or a department incurred material irregularities. If that is the case, we will then ask the accounting officer or the authority to make representation in terms of what they are doing to address the material irregularity. If we find that those representations are not sufficient to address the material irregularity, we can then take binding remedial action, which will be included in the auditor's report going forward, and which we will then hold the accounting officer or authority responsible for. If we then find that the accounting officer's responsibility is still not addressing the remedial binding action, we will then move forward with the notification of issuing a certificate of debt. I will explain this process in an example, but further in the presentation. So those are the three main areas in terms of our expansion of our mandate that we will now be phasing in going forward. The next slide, slide number 20, talks about what is the definition of a material irregularity. So a material irregularity, first of all, we need to look at what is irregularity, and then second of all, what is material. So an irregularity refers to any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation. It also refers to any fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty. It has to have been identified during the audit performed under this Act, and it should result in or likely to result in a financial loss. So first of all, it refers to irregularity refers to non-compliance of legislation, fraud, theft, and breach of fiduciary duty. And then second of all, it should have resulted or is likely to result in a material financial loss or the misuse of or loss of material public resource or substantial harm to the public sector, institution, or general public. I will give an example of it later. Examples of material irregularities on the next slide. First of all, irregularity will be your non-compliance with supply chain management will be an example. What's the impact? If we can determine there's a material financial loss due to goods being procured above market value, then that will be classified as a material irregularity. The second one talks about suspected bribery of an official to approve the payment for services not received. Again, impact being the fact that you're paying for a service not received, which means you did not receive any value, which then results in a material financial loss. Third one is the board of a public entity not exercising their duty of utmost care in investing the funds of the entity. Again, if this board is a result of negligence and also cost the entity to incur financial loss, it will then be assessed whether or not it's a material loss to the public entity. So those are some of the examples. I'm not going to go through each and every one, but it's just for the committee to take note of. Those are only some examples. It's not limited to the only examples. Then if I get to page, after slide number 22, it talks about, so what's the difference between material irregularity and irregular expenditure? So first of all, your irregular expenditure is non-compliance or contravention of any legislation. Where a material irregularity has got an increased or a more comprehensive scope, it also includes fraud, theft, and a breach of fiduciary duty that I explained earlier, and also talks then about the financial loss, material financial loss. So the biggest difference is that in terms of irregular expenditure, an entity can incur irregular expenditure for not complying with legislation, but they might not have incurred a financial loss, which would then only be an irregular expenditure. If we find that the entity or department incurred irregular expenditure and this has also led to a material financial loss or a likely material financial loss, then that will form the basis in terms of complying with the definition of a material irregularity, which the accounting officer then needs to pursue in terms of the PFMA section on consequence management. difference in impact. As mentioned there, the impact of the regular expenditure is not specific, as the PMA requires the accounting officer or authority to determine the impact, and then also can the regular expenditure that did not result in a loss, misuse, or harm. Whereas with material regularity, it must have resulted in, or there must be indicators that it's likely to result in a material financial loss or misuse of loss of a material public resource or substantial harm. Your difference in value on page on slide 23 talks about then a regular expenditure, the value of the expenditure to date, and that's for a regular expenditure, material regularity. Like I mentioned earlier, it doesn't have to have a value at that specific point in time. It can be a likely loss that the department or entity in the future will incur. That will also be in terms of the definition of material regularity. Okay, I think if I come to slide 25, this talks about an example of the process that will be followed in terms of material irregularity. So I think this slide and the next slide will give members the most complete view of how this process works. First of all, we need to identify the MIs, the material irregularity, during the audit, which is part of the definition. It has to be identified during the audit process. Then on step number two, we will then notify the accounting officer or authority of the MI, and we will give them 20 days, that's in terms of the legislation, for them to provide us a response on how they are dealing with the material regularity. Once we receive the responses, we will then evaluate the accounting officer or authority's response to determine if appropriate action is actually being taken to address the material regularity. On step four, if we find that the material regularity appropriate action from the accounting officer is not appropriate, we will then make recommendations in our audit report recommending to the accounting authority officer as to how they should deal with the actual material regularity, and that becomes a remedial binding action for the accounting authority officer to follow up. In step five, we will then follow up in terms of what has been implemented by the accounting officer authority during our next audit cycle. If we find that the remedial action has not been properly implemented or it does not address the actual material irregularity, we will then request a written submission on reasons not to issue a certificate of debt. That needs to be provided to us within 20 working days. Once we receive the submission, we can conclude based on the written submission whether the certificate of debt process should continue or whether or not the response is now addressing the actual material irregularity. If we find that the response is still not addressing the material irregularity, we will then request a verbal representation from the accounting officer authority to our advisory committee within the Auditor General, and we will then request a response as to why we should not continue with issuing a certificate of debt. On step number eight, if we then find that the representation was not successful from the accounting authority or they did not attend the meeting for whatever reason, we will then move forward in issuing a certificate of debt in the person's name or in the board collective name. On slide 27, we talk about the AG's got the sole discretion to determine the nature, frequency and scope of the audits. That's in terms of the Public Audit Act. We talk about the AG may refer material irregularities to public bodies. That's what I mentioned earlier, that we can refer our material irregularities to, for example, the Hawks or to the prosecuting authorities. And then we can also, the AG may also make recommendations in the audit report regarding any matter. So those, one thing that should be noted, once we make recommendations in the audit report, it becomes an immediate action for the accounting officer or authority to implement going forward. So how are we phasing this in? At the moment, we are busy with a phased-in approach. We've selected 16 audits that was based on the criteria of having high irregular expenditure over the last 3 years, and also it was also a combination of different spheres of government and provinces. Environmental affairs was not, is not, and was not part of the selection process as yet. I will then move on to slide number 33, roles of oversight and executive authority. So the executive authority needs to insist on credible and frequent reporting on state and financial performance information. You use the reports, monitor, direct and support accountability, and set the tone of accountability. And also sharing knowledge on possible material irregularities within the portfolio, and monitor the implementation of recommendations of material irregularities. Also support the referral and remedial process, and if responsible for public body, monitor progress of investigations. Oversight structure. Use information of the audit and audit report and regulate for accountability and oversight purposes, insisting on timely implementation of recommendations. So I think one thing that we are trying to mention and highlight here is the fact that although we issue the material regularity to the accounting officer or accounting authority, there are still specific oversight responsibilities that the executive authority must follow in this process, and also the portfolio committee to make sure that the material regularity process is being addressed going forward in terms of the legislation. Okay. Then if we come to slide number 37, so now I'm going to, so that was more or less an introduction in terms of what we do as an office and also our extended powers that recently came into existence from 1 April 2019. And now I'll move forward into specifically environmental affairs and also forestry and fisheries. So this slide just indicates more or less the public entities with, under Department of Environmental Affairs, and also any departmental funded multi-year projects in the EED. So these are some of the biggest projects, working on fire, Green Fund and Waste Bureau for the TISA. The entities being Sandbox, Sambi, Isimangisu, and then South African Weather Service. Sorry about that. It's not my strong point. I'm sorry about that. Okay, then audit outcomes of the portfolio over the last 5 years. So this is an outcome in terms of the whole portfolio, as you can see from right to left, 13-14 to 17-18, you'll see that there was a bit of a regression from the department where they used to be clean, they used to be green, and now currently they're sitting with an adverse opinion. It should also be noted that we only included 17-18 because of 18-19 not yet tabled as yet and not 100% finalized. I will answer any questions on that as now we go. And then in terms of also Sandy also receiving a qualified opinion. Okay, so what led to DIA regressing? One of the main concerns or issues we identified during the 16-17 audit was that DIA used to account for their projects as transfer payments. Specifically EPWP used to be transfer payments, and upon review of the contracts and actually the way the department was conducting the projects, we then identified it should not be classified as transfer payments, it should be classified as goods and services. And this has got far-reaching implications. So we prepared a slide to inform what's the difference between a transfer payment versus a goods and services. And then with included in this goods and services were also then some capital assets that some of these projects were procuring for these projects. So one of the biggest differences is the fact that with a transfer payment, he transferred the money over to the receiving entity or institution, and it's, you don't have to do any supply chain, you don't really have to do a lot of monitoring, it will just be a compliance exercise in terms of getting assurance from your internal controls from the receiving entity whether or not they will be able to actually execute the mandate of the project. The goods and services, on the other hand, has got a different process. You need to budget approval for the expenditure, you need to follow supply chain management processes, you need to confirm whether or not the goods and services are being delivered, and you need to account for the goods and services to be delivered. Apart from that, you also need to then classify whatever capital assets you purchase during this project, you also need to then bring into the financial statements of the department. So currently, what we found was then that the transfer payments were not classified correctly in the financial statements of DIA. This was 2 years ago, this was 16-17 and 17-18. We then embarked with Treasury to get a position paper on this. We met with the accountant general as well, and we came to the same conclusion that the department needs to classify these contracts as goods and services and not transfer payments. The problem being, the department was never geared or never had controls to actually monitor these projects at ground level. So currently it's been an exercise for the last 2 years. The department has been trying to implement controls to monitor these projects going forward, not only from a performance information point of view, but also from a financial point of view. And they have done various efforts. At the moment, 18-19 audits, we are concluding as I'm speaking, and we have seen great efforts by the department to try and account for these projects as required by terms of the framework. But we still identified some various qualification areas that we are still busy just wrapping up at the moment. We do, however, see improvement from management, as they have already started providing or implementing controls to give different assurance services from these projects, where they will prepare financial statements per project to be consolidated into the financials of the department. Although we did identify some control deficiencies in that process, we do understand the department is at least moving in the direction of accounting for the goods and services correctly now. Maybe on this slide sets out a bit more detail for you to follow. So you'll see at the bottom it says transfer payments. So in the past it used to be classified as transfer payments. Then 17-18 we identified it should be goods and services, which is your current expenditure, but there are also elements of capital expenditure, which was never accounted for correctly. And then in terms of the audit outcome for 17-18, we then identified there are various components that impacting different balances and figures within the financial statements, being prepayments, capex, implementing agent fees, accrued revenue, in terms of infrastructure projects, also prepayments, etc. So as you can see from this process, you can see what in the way they should have accounted for it versus the way they have been accounting for it. So that's just from a financial statement point of view. I'll then move over to slide 42. So then, in terms of slide 42, is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So there was 8 million incurred by DIA in the 17-18 financial year, and it related mainly to overpayments on contracts, and where the department is currently pursuing legal action to recover the money. Then in terms of irregular expenditure, the department incurred 78 million in 17-18, and this was due to the fact that there was a shortening of a bid advertisement period for 3 bids, which were invalid in terms of the process followed for shortening the advertisement period. This then also resulted in 78 million of irregular expenditure. It should also be noted that because of this changing of the EPWP from a transfer payment to a supply to a goods and services, all those projects had to actually go through supply chain processes, which we could not determine the total amount of irregular expenditure due to these processes, and that then also led to a qualification in terms of irregular expenditure, where we actually mentioned to say that we don't know what the total value of irregular expenditure that the department needs to disclose for 17-18, and therefore we qualified on that balance. Okay, some of the main root causes in slide 43. Being one of the main root causes was the fact that they had to change from transfer payments to goods and services, and it should be noted that the department was given exemption by Treasury until 15-16 to actually get their accounting correctly stated. But as soon as the exemption fell away, the department was still then accounting for it as transfer payments, which was then incorrectly classified. Yeah, we also mentioned the fact, another root causes is the fact that preventative controls to early detect non-compliance are not always in place by the department. And then the third one is the one that I think we struggle with the most, was the inadequate record keeping of financial and performance information. One of the things that we find within the department is due to the fact that some of these projects are run in rural areas. We do struggle sometimes to get information in terms of the actual performance and the record keeping of financial information. We also note that the people running the projects are mostly environmental specialists, and they are not accountants as such. So there seems to be sometimes a lack of accounting happening in terms of the information to be submitted to the branches. And we also then struggle sometimes to get the information we need to make our proper conclusions in terms of those account and balances. So I know that's something the department is working on currently. Like I mentioned earlier, that's something where they have now instituted a formal process as to how these projects need to be accounted for. It's mainly now just to roll out and educate the department officials into exactly as to how they should report on these projects. Okay. Okay, move to the second portfolio is in forestry and fisheries, 45, slide 45. I'm not going to touch too much on forestry. One of the biggest challenges with forestry that we are facing is the safeguarding of plantations. We have identified there's quite a lot of illegal harvesting and theft of trees that are also happening within the forestry space. But within forestry and fisheries, one of our biggest concerns is the MLRF, your Marine Living Resource Fund, and they actually regressed to a qualified opinion, and the qualified opinion was mainly relating to property, plant and equipment. They also had some issues in terms of credible performance information, expenditure management as they incurred irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and then also a lack of consequence management. On the next slide, slide 46, you will see the irregular expenditure on the slide is all incurred by MLRF specifically. It relates mainly to non-compliance of the PPPFA requirements or your preferential procurement framework or in terms of supply chain management processes, and it relates mainly in respect of SAMHSA, Marine Special Projects. So then slide 47, so what are the main root causes? So into a little bit more detail, which is probably not displayed on this document, is that we've identified they haven't had a CFO for quite some time. There's a vacant CFO, which then also talks to the qualification on PPE, or property, plant and equipment, and we've also identified that they've got an acting head of supply chain. Without these two critical positions being filled, the entity are exposed to these types of non-compliances and also the accounting issues that are not being accounted for correctly. Then the second root causes we also identified is also inadequate consequences for poor performance and transgressions. It should be noted the status of this of the minister commitments here is the previous minister's commitments that we've assessed, and we will obtain new ones after this financial year conclusion. Okay, and that is my presentation, and I'll take some questions. Thank you very much.
No, we are not in terms of the program at that stage now. We'll allow the department to I'm reading what is in the program. It says briefing by the national, briefing by the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries on the implementation of the modified cash standard in order to obtain a clean audit by end of 2018-19 financial year. We now allow the minister to introduce the matter and take it from there. You take charge in terms of who comes in.
All right, I'm going to hand over to the Director General. Obviously, the year under consideration, I wasn't there. But these good people were. But nevertheless, ministers inherit the situation whether they caused it or not. So the only thing you can do when you inherit a problem is to take the beating quietly. Thank you.
Maybe.
Yeah, Jefferson, thank you. Just for clarity, I mean, they want to present to us how to obtain a clean audit by 18-19, but that audit would have been completed. And we don't know what the outcome of that audit was. So maybe they want to talk about next year. I think we should deal with the problems that they've had. And then they can come back later and tell us about how they want to get a clean audit in 19-20. So I don't know how we had 18-19 on the agenda. I'm trying to understand the agenda.
Must get to the other clarity.
I think you know, we haven't seen the financial statement for the sea fisheries. It's the only one for 18-19. But I think the others have seen. But I'm more interested in the 104 million in minister. You correctly inherited a headache here with environmental affairs, and you don't have to take the beating. We must just look for the culprits and deal with them, because we've dealt with 9 million rand out of 104 million rand of irregular and wasteful expenditure. Now, I think part of solving your problem going forward, Minister, is actually to find the culprits and to deal with them and make an example of them. You know, we must not tolerate this type of thing in the department. I think you know, it's, this department has gotten away with quite a lot of irregular or unethical behavior as well within the department.
I think I must now guide the meeting. Yes, I took note of the issue of 2019, 2018, 2019, whatever. But let's allow the department to take us through. We were being taken through by the Office of the Auditor General. So let's allow them to take us through. And let's remember what we asked the minister to do when we're presenting the APP. If there's anything, I think let's take note of that. It's not questions of clarity that you are asking now. We want to discuss on the basis of the information that is before us.
but let's allow the department first. Can we allow the DG?
I think, Chairperson, first of all, one would want to say that it would be appropriate once we have the audit report for this financial year, 18-19, that we then present to this committee a clear, first of all, how we will deal with all matters of emphasis and all matters of qualification. Secondly, I think we would then want to put before this committee a realistic time frame around getting a clean audit. My own experience, and I've had considerable experience of dealing with departments and audit outcomes in my previous portfolio, you don't move from a disclaimer to a clean audit in 1 year. And I think that if anybody thinks that is possible, I'm sure you will agree, it's based on lack of experience that you can think you can have that. So I would want to suggest that we should not be presenting pie-in-the-sky wish lists before the committee. What we should do is defer this discussion until we have the audit outcome, and then we come here and we put a realistic presentation to the committee as to how are we going to reach a clean audit outcome. I would also just want to say, once we receive the audit outcome, when there is irregular expenditure, my instruction to the Director General will be all irregular expenditure must have a forensic investigation put into it. That is my standard approach to irregular expenditure, an independent forensic investigation. That will then advise us what we do about it. But I think that I'm clear that irregular expenditure is serious, and if there are findings, it will result in disciplinary action. So that is the commitment I can give this committee at this stage. But my suggestion is let's deal with facts and reality, not with a wish list at this stage.
I still want to insist, we want to hear the department. Any money we have lost in the past, it still belongs to the people of this country. Any record that we have now, we still want people to talk about it. You can only learn lessons from engaging on issues. Not, yes, I think if we want to talk about clean audit, process leading to that, but you must start from somewhere. That money that we are talking about belongs to the people of South Africa. So the records are there, so hence we asked the department to come before us to tell us what they want to tell us. We will not prescribe what you want to tell us. But you can't keep quiet when we are getting a picture like this. So any process will start from now. And when I say now does not start now. It starts from what we are we were talking about the fourth quarter report in the past. So hence one would want the department to talk. Let's not use the Auditor General's office report to engage on this matter. Let's hear them. Especially on the issue of what is this modified cash something. Because you said there was an issue. It means it looks like you have found each other. We want to understand that. Whether you have found yourself and it's something that we can touch so that we can use it going forward. Because I said let's not start discussing. Let's get the department saying something, and on the basis of that, let's do that. Now, if I take your hand before her, then that would be something else. Can you come in before I monopolize the No, I'm just allowing the members to help me so that we can have a common understanding of the issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and all the officials here today. I just need some clarity, please. With regard to the 2017-2018 adverse finding within DIA, the issue was picked up with regards to the transfer payment and why it hadn't been classified under goods and services in that financial year already. So why is it that it was still under transfer payments the following year, or was it not? Then, in terms of the department being geared now to implement certain controls, how far are they in achieving this outcome? They did touch on the 2018-2019 audit and said that there were still great efforts being undertaken, but there were qualification areas, and I want to know if these qualification areas are still on the basis of misallocation of funds under transfer payments, when again they should have been under goods and services, and why, if this is so, it's still continued despite the position paper that was tabled. Then, why were...
These are not questions for clarity. This is
for clarity. I want to understand on the basis of this presentation.
I think you'll do that.
On the funds.
No, you'll do that in 2.1.
That's why I
question for clarity. But let's allow the department first. You want to say something? Because that's why I allowed her. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. My worry is that as I was once a public servant, what I know is that once the Auditor General report is submitted to the department, immediately the department must respond on the issues where they are raised. And I don't think by now the department didn't have chance to respond to the Auditor General. And I feel that somehow then the department, if they want to report, to give us a report on 2018-2019, how are they going to correct corrective measures? What did they respond to the Auditor General on 2017-18? Because that's what they should have started with, and then say, up to now, this is where we are, but this is what we are going to, which now comes the 2018-19 strategies. But we cannot allow the department to give us 2018-19, and yet there was a response, unless they say there was no response to the Auditor General.
That is what we want the department to present. They will tell us what they have been doing, what are they doing now, planning to improve going forward. Can we allow the DG and your team, DG, to help us? I think all the questions and everything else, and how do we link this with the 2018-2019, link all of that and say this is where we'll take it after the outcome of the 2018-19. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members, and good morning, Minister. We do have, firstly, let me just provide just a short indication on what we have been doing. Firstly, Chair, honourable members, the AG has outlined that subsequent to us having, after we had not received exemptions, our budget in terms of our allocation and appropriation was still under transfers, and therefore we still applied the transfers regulations in respect of 2016-17. And subsequently, they audited the Office of the Accountant General, which is what the Auditor General was reporting,
presented a paper guiding how we should treat the different programs. Within the environmental program portfolio, there are different types of transactions. Some still qualify to be transferred even now, others are not. So that process with the Accountant General assisted us to break down all of the different programs. We have clearing of invasive, for example, in various catchments, and we have the use of that material as furniture or other production of products. And how we transact in terms of those, we then got guidance through that guidance, that paper that was prepared by the Accountant General. Similarly, the Auditor General has mentioned that we have the Green Fund. The Green Fund is administered, again, as a transfer to the DBSA, which is the bank, and they issue loans. How we account for it, even now, we still have challenges. But there are, we do report on it in our annual financial statement. But because we don't carry the actual loan book, there are other tricky disclosures that we had to discuss with the AG and got further guidance on. So the presentation by the CFO then outlines what has been done. So there is improvement, but there are still areas where we have challenges, and we'll be able to then give further details on 2018 later on. But in the document, we have just given an indication on some of those areas that were highlighted by the Auditor General. But maybe it, as the Minister is saying, maybe it's premature for us to get into the discussions of 2018-19 audit report, because the Auditor General has not completed that. So we had presented previously the turnaround strategy, and quickly the CFO can highlight what are those areas where we have made and effected changes in respect of the turnaround strategy. So we have implemented a turnaround strategy. We are applying the goods and services and other transcripts that are applicable in terms of treasury regulation, and away from the transfer payment, because transfer payment has got different rules. And we appeared, honorable members, before the SCOPA on the matter, and we presented exactly the same information that the AG has presented to this committee. So these are the areas where there were differences, and it is not money that has disappeared. It is in actual fact how we have disclosed it and how we have been treating those transactions in terms of our processes as prescribed by Treasury regulation. CFO, Esther?
Thanks. Can we go to slide number one? Expenditure per program. Next slide. This is what, you know, like where I'm analyzing the expenditure of 2018-19. And then from there, I'll look at what has been classified. If we look at it, we're looking at Program 6, Environmental Programs. That is where the modified cash standards actually, you know, like, operate. And if we look at it for 18-19, we only spent 84%, because we're also looking at recategorizing that. Next slide. And then we've moved that program 6 that was transferred. If you look at, you know, like the third line, it says compensation of employees, then goods and services, then there's waste management bureau, then there is expanded public works program. So it has now moved from transfers to goods and services on top. We've got our own goods and services of about 1.1 billion. Then we've got expanded public works programs of 3.1 billion. So that's where the modified cash standards is actually applying. And DG has explained that we still have other transfers that we're doing. Departmental agencies, you can see them there, a budget of 1.183 billion. So those are still treated as transfers. And then DG also spoke about the Green Fund, that 95 million in bold. we didn't even transfer it to DBSA last year because the accounting there keeps on changing. So we have accounted for it per the AG's recommendation. We changed again, which means, you know, we are treating it almost, you know, like we must reflect the amounts that are in the Green Fund books at DBSA and take them and put them in our financial statements. So we're still perfecting that. So that is, you know, like that 3.1 billion as well as the Green Fund there. Our public entities are still okay. Next slide. And that is what I've explained to say why some of the transfers were not made. So that's the Green Fund there where I'm talking about it, as well as the non, you know, somewhere we didn't move the funds in order to understand. So we saved 701 million. We paid it back to National Treasury last year. Next slide. And that is just our graphical presentation of expenditure. Next slide. And that is our 30 days payment report. I'm not going to talk much about it. I'm still using. Next slide. And that is the analysis of our goods and services in the department, except for that 3.1 billion of EPWP, as I've mentioned it. Next slide. And all that is also, you know, like just analyzing our expenditure, not affected by a modified cash standard. Next slide. Okay. Yes. So I don't think we need to report more. There's still operating expenditure. Next slide.
I can see the numbers. They think you are just browsing through, not helping us to understand what you are doing.
Okay.
So by indication, that demand that you are saying, there's no need for us to do this. So you're not helping us. Please. I don't know how you are going to do it, but you're not talking to us.
Okay, maybe I can explain, just go back to where you had the transfers on the classification. Okay. Honorable members, okay. Esther, Veronica, in the slide that you presented to SCOPA, because we did not expect that you wanted us to go back to how we then dealt with, in details, how we dealt with the changes. And those are the slides that we don't have here. But what we have presented under goods and services, honorable members, where you have the EPWP 3.1 billion, before, which is the year before, we had that line under transfer payments. And that's what we wanted to show in what we presented previously. Secondly, the Office of the Accountant General has allowed the department to have certain codes on SCOA, where we then are able to provide the breakdown in terms of reflecting the information on the financials. So I think that if honorable members want that report, maybe that's what we should either request that we present it later on, or we bring it when we discuss the 2018-19 audit report, because we did not prepare the presentation for that today. So I'm just explaining that change because that's what we were being asked. So we had the paper which was presented to us by the Accountant General. While the Office of the Accountant General is not yet given us permission to on SCOA, is the revenue line for, or at least a category for the Green Fund, which partly also I think the Auditor General can explain when they were auditing us this year, that it then gives the impression that the money is sitting with the department when in actual fact those funds are sitting with the DBSA. But and then there are a few other areas where we were still getting further clarity, like in working on fire around the assets. There were discussions that we had to pursue with the Accountant General for further clarity. But in the main, where we have clarity, those are the areas where we've implemented those changes in our annual financial statements. And I would implore the honourable members that we then bring that presentation that we did previously together with what the AG has raised as what were the problems, how we resolved them, and then with the guidance from the National Treasurer. That would be what we would do if that is what is required, Honourable Chair, on the financials.
I think I know, I don't know what other members, I know what we want. We were told that, you see, for us, our interest is on creating jobs. Once you talk about EPWP, then we are told there's a problem. Then immediately we have interest in that. So it's not about AG, it's not about SCOPA, it's not about everybody else. It's about number two, if they say when you spend money as transfers, it's not similar to when you are spending money, goods and services, we also become interested. So it's not a matter of explaining to us how you would watch the AG and what the, what is that other one who has given a paper. Our accountant generals are members of the public. We are public representatives. So what we are interested in, this money, have you used that money properly? Did we get value for money? That's all we are interested in. So that's what we expected. So when we met you, I thought when you said you want her to present turnaround, she was going to tell us, this is the plan, this is the turnaround. So I don't know how that paper you want to bring here, whether it will respond to how are you turning around the situation for us such that we get maximum benefit. When I say we, the people of South Africa. Yeah. So hence I'm saying, I'm not sure whether to say now if there's no turnaround, you will not penalize you for that, because we don't know how it would look like. You are better placed to tell us. This is what we have been doing. You have tried to say it, this 3-point-something billion. But you are now saying there's a document. We don't know how it looks like.
We have the turnaround strategy, Chair. We can present that because we have presented previously to the committee. So that's what I was wanting to get an understanding. Should we present that today? And we can do it because we do have that. What did we do to make sure that we turn around? And then when we discuss 2018, whether that turnaround strategy is bearing the outcomes that we expect, and then what the minister is saying, what is realistic. So if the question is whether today we only present to you, as the honourable members, the information on performance, how have we delivered on the performance, and then all of the financial management issues be presented. Either now, if you allow us just to get those presentations, because that's not what we have prepared for today. I'm just requesting clarity from you.
Let me be helped as well, so that
Chair, I'm not very comfortable. May I request that you give us a 10-minute comfort break? There are a number of issues that we might need to discuss ourselves in private. But in a form of a comfort break, just take a walk and get some fresh air, because I'm feeling hot already.
I'm not sure about that comfort break.
Yeah, Chairperson, no, I'm not averse to the comfort break. I think we need it, maybe a cup of tea or coffee. But my suggestion is that anything to do with audits, and the report of the audit agenda, the response to the department, we should postpone to another meeting. Let's get the 18-19 audit report, and then we can deal comprehensively with the audit outcomes of 18, 19 and previous ones and then take it from there. What we should be dealing with now is maybe the fourth quarter and everything else, because there are specific questions that we'd like to ask. So that's a proposal I'm making, that we suspend discussions on the audits, on the audit issues, and deal with that after 18, 19 audit outcomes are presented, which shouldn't be too long from now, because September is, you might already have it, but it will be tabled. So, in the next, in October, end of September.
I'm still trying to we are Democrats here. What should we do? He wants a comfort break, and okay, let's break for tea, then we'll come back. If we say do what, we'll be able to say so after this tea break. It's tea break for how many? 10 minutes. Okay, tea break.